It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Good Saturday morning. It is November 16th. I'm Scott Jagow and happy to be joined by a first-time guest, Michelle Reeser-West. Good morning, Michelle.
Hey, good morning.
Thank you for coming in and sharing your knowledge of gardening and topics related to it. I'm going to talk a little bit about you, and then you can answer some questions about yourself. Michelle is a lifelong gardener and has been a professional plant nerd for almost 15 years. You'll fit in well here. Horticulture is her second career. After spending the first 10 years sitting behind a desk, she went back to school and received a degree in horticulture with an emphasis in design from St. Louis Community College at Merrimack. She is currently director of horticulture for Pointer Landscape Architecture and Construction and also on the board of Landscape Nursery Association of Greater St. Louis. The majority of her career has focused on residential landscape design and maintenance. Again, welcome, Michelle. Anything you want to add to that?
Thank you for having me here. This is a new experience for me, but I love to share all of my knowledge of plants and horticulture. So I hope that I can do a good job for everybody in answering their questions. I currently, like you said, work at Pointer Landscape. I am the director of horticulture, but basically what that means is anything that is plant related is in my purview. And one of those things is running the maintenance department. So I have a lot of experience with garden maintenance, garden pest and disease issues, and all of those things. So hopefully I can share that with some of the callers today.
I appreciate that. And the fact that you have expertise in those particular areas are always popular questions. I mean, pests, maintenance,
yes.
Landscape, all the words you use, those are some of the things people like to ask questions about. So, if you have a question for Michelle, the number is 314-436-7900. That's the local number. There's also a 1-800 number, and you do have to dial the 1. It's 1-800-925-1120, as in 1120 a.m. Again, the local number is 314-436-7900. And what are some of the things you're doing right now at Pointer here in mid-November?
Well, we're actually a little bit behind schedule. The weather has kind of been not cooperating this fall. So we have typically put a lot of gardens to bed, but we haven't really had much of a frost. So a lot of things are sticking around a lot longer than they normally do. We still have clients that have their summer annuals in. They still look good. They don't want to take them out, so we're kind of up against a wall because we try to end our garden season or our maintenance season by, you know, the end of December, but there's still so much that looks good. I mean, we typically have plants that melt away after a frost, like hosta and things like that, that we can start cleaning up. Even the leaves are holding on to the trees a little bit longer than they typically do because we haven't had a lot of cold weather. So the leaves are finally starting to fall. We've got a little bit of rain, so a lot of leaf cleanup right now. I think our crews are really, really tired of leaves. I think they're probably ready to put the rakes away and take a little winter break. But yeah, so you said something, or we just heard a story about deer and the dangers of driving with deer, but we're also dealing with a lot of deer issue right now. I think St. Louis, as a lot of people might know, has a really crazy deer population. And we're dealing with a lot of deer damage. It's the deers have antlers, and they are destroying trees left and right. So we've been putting up a lot of deer fencing and trying to protect our trees and shrubs against that kind of damage. So we're getting a lot of calls on that and how to deal with that.
Oh, that's a good point. Let's go to our first phone call. Pat, you are on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Oh, that sounds
good. Go ahead, Pat.
Morning.
Morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Michelle. I just have a question. I know we have some cold weather coming in the end of the week. What would be the best way to overwinter geraniums that are still outside?
Are they the hardy geranium that are in the ground, or there's a geranium like an annual that you planted this summer?
I planted in the summer, so I doubt that they're hardy.
Sure, yeah. So the best thing that you can do is get them inside, get them out of the ground if they're in the ground, or get them into a pot that is that you're able to bring inside. You're going to want to try to keep them watered through the winter. They're going to also need sunlight. So, you know, trying to find a sunny window where they can get enough sunlight. I bring in a lot of my annuals. I have a porch full of tropicals and plants of all kinds and shapes and sizes. And I have actually been slacking with bringing mine in because the weather's been so nice. But it's definitely time this weekend to bring them in. So what I do is I find a nice sunny spot as, you know, as many places as I have. And then the other thing that I do is I have a space in my basement that I've set up some grow lights or things like that, so we can make sure that they get enough sunlight. And again, they probably won't need as much watering because we're in winter, but definitely bringing them inside in a pot that's manageable for the space that you have.
Right. Well, they still have flowers on them, so should I cut the flowers off?
So,
I mean, you know, I don't know if it's going to draw energy from the roots away from it or...
No, I mean, just continue to do what you do outside. If you are deadheading after the flowers are spent, just keep deadheading. You can also give it a little haircut so it doesn't have to produce as much energy. You can...
Okay, yeah, that's kind of what I was asking about, trimming it back a little.
For sure. I would definitely trim it back a little bit.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much, Michelle. Have a good rest of the day.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for calling in, Pat. We appreciate it. It's 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline, and we'll continue with your phone calls for Michelle from Pointer Landscape Architecture and Construction in just a moment. Good morning. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX on this cloudy November day. We have Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscape Architecture to answer your questions. She's a first-timer, so come with, bring it. Bring your questions.
Yeah, bring it on.
314-436-7900. Up next, we have Bonnie. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. I have a problem. I have a plant. I have a lemon tree, and it's still small. But it has some kind of a mite on it with a cobweb-like thing.
Sure.
I cannot find the bug, but I'd like to get rid of it. It's been on there all summer. I've cleaned it up two or three times, and it always comes back.
So what it sounds like to me is probably a spider mite. They're really, really small. One of the ways that you can see them is if you take a white piece of paper and put it under the leaves of the plant and just kind of shake the plant. And then you take your hand and kind of brush it across the paper. And if there are little brownish red smears, then you know that those are spider mites. And the spider mites do make webs. There's a couple ways that you can treat them. But one of the first things that we tend to try is something that is an organic product. We always try to start with something that's not as nasty as some of the products that you can buy at the hardware stores. But I would say start with some neem oil. You can, again, get that at Home Depot or Lowe's or any of the hardware stores. And then you're going to have to spray it multiple times. So spray it thoroughly. Spray the underside of the leaves. They tend to be on the bottom side of the leaves. So it's important to spray underneath. And then you'll have to do it more than one time. So I would just keep your eye on it and, you know, maybe once a week do that test where you shake the leaf onto a white piece of paper to see if those mites are still present. And as soon as you don't see those anymore, you can stop spraying and stop treating.
Oh, wow. Okay. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, no problem.
I've been fighting this. I'm tired of fighting it.
Yeah. I would start with that. Neem oil. It's definitely it. But it's a spider mite.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, those things are tiny.
They're teeny tiny. And we are seeing problems with spider mites a lot this year. We really struggle with them on our boxwoods and our ornamental landscape, but they definitely become a problem really fast, and they spread everywhere, and they make people are always really concerned because there are webs all over their shrubs or their plants, and it doesn't look great, but it's relatively easy to control if you stay on top of it and you spray it a few times.
So they create webs.
Correct.
So it's a mite.
Uh-huh. It's a spider.
It's a
spider mite. Yeah. Okay. So it's a mite that makes webs.
Wow. Okay.
Science.
Very interesting. Yeah. All right. Let's continue with the phone calls at 314-436-7900 for Michelle. Mary Beth, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. I've got a quick question. I have knockout roses that are blooming. I mean, they're just, I don't understand having roses this long. But I wanted to know that they've grown quite a bit this year, and they're almost like 4 feet tall. I wondered, someone told me it's best to cut them back right before the first frost. Would that be right? So like cutting them down this week because we're going to have that frost, or is it best to let them go until spring?
So that's a great question, and it is super interesting that we're a couple weeks out from Thanksgiving and we still have roses that are in bloom, and we're talking about this. But what I prefer to do, and there's a lot of different ways in horticulture, there's 100 different ways and 100 different opinions, but for me, I think about what the rose will actually need or want. Roses do tend to get a lot of winter damage here in St. Louis. So I like to do as little pruning as possible in the fall. So what we tend to do is you could deadhead, you could even out the height. You could, even take as much of a third off of the top of the plant just to make it, a little smaller, or sometimes knockout roses by, the end of the summer are quite big, like you said. So doing a small haircut now before the frost would be fine. But really when you want to prune your roses and it sounds like you might need a size reduction on those roses because they've gotten so large, I would wait till they're dormant, wait till the end of winter, early spring, when their buds are starting to swell, or just before that. And you can take roses back pretty hard, especially knockout roses. Knockout roses were intended, I think, in the beginning when they first came on the market to be a low-maintenance rose. And they are to some degree, but they do need some hard pruning every few seasons, or even every year you can do it. But you can take it back as low as 18 inches, do some thinning cuts, because roses also get a lot of pest and disease issues, and part of that is due to air circulation. So every 2 to 3 seasons is really important. And again, you can do it every year if you'd like. But you can cut it back hard to 18 inches and do some thinning cuts, and it'll flush back out great. Roses bloom on new wood, so a haircut this time of year isn't going to affect anything for the flower next season. So, yeah, I would. So in summary, I would do a little haircut this fall and then do a harder cut back in the spring.
Well, because my dad used to cut these things down to like 8 inches. I mean, it was ridiculous. He'd cut them down way low, and I used to think that would just kill the plant. It never did, but I just wondered about that.
And like I said, there's so many different approaches to horticulture. I know that some people do cut them back really hard in the fall, and then they'll mound up mulch or something over the top of it to try to protect it through the winter. There's a bunch of different ways of doing it. That's one of them for sure. But yeah.
Well, I like your idea better. I think that's what I'll do. I'll just trim it a little bit and then wait till the spring.
Great. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Mary Beth, for calling in to the Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900. Why are they called knockout roses?
I don't know. They're knockout. I think it's just the, you know, maybe it's just the look. It's just a wow factor.
Oh, okay.
You know, people that name plants, it's one of the, it's like on my horticulture bucket list to name plants. When you see all the different names in the of the different cultivars of things, it's it can get kind of wild. It can get punny. There's a salvia that's out there that's called Back to the Fuchsia. So that's a fun one. But yeah, it's on my list of things to do is to find and name a new cultivar of something. And it will be as punny as possible. I'm going to find the best name.
All right, let's continue with the phone calls for Michelle. She's with Pointer Landscape Architecture. Doug, you're up next.
Hi, okay. Doug.
Okay, Doug, go ahead. Can you turn your radio off, Doug?
We have a dwarf Myers lemon tree that we had outside. We have now moved it into a garage that gets good sunlight in the winter, and it's loaded with buds. To get the buds to grow bigger, the small lemons to grow bigger, should we pluck some of them off? Because, I mean, it is loaded with these things. And in the past, we've gotten some that were about a little bigger than the size of a big grape. So should we thin them out?
Yeah, you definitely can. So the plant will send energy to all of those flowers. So if you remove some of them, it can send energy to the remaining ones, which will make the fruit a little bit bigger. And the other thing you need to think about is if those flower buds have been germinated or not. I mean, we still have some pollinators out there, but they may not have been pollinated, so you may not get fruit from them. But definitely you can thin out some of the flowers to send some energy to those other buds.
Some of the buds have gotten to where they're about the size of a pea, so it's a good idea to pluck some of them off.
For sure, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for calling in, Doug. The phone number you can reach Michelle to ask your question. She's got a lot of knowledge about landscaping, and already she has provided some good answers. So this is at your service. That's what we do. 314-436-7900. We have some open phone lines, and we will take your calls and get to those questions in just a moment. Stay tuned to the Garden Hotline on KMOX. This is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow. Happy to be joined by a first-time guest, Michelle Reeser-West. She's with Pointer Landscape Architecture and Construction. She has a lot of expertise in horticulture and landscape design and maintenance. And those are prime topics for this show. So
it sounds like it. There's a lot of questions about lime trees, citrus trees today. I'm surprised by that. But yeah, totally plant nerd, like I said earlier. But yeah, do a lot of things at Pointer, and I'm happy to answer some more questions. So I hope some more people call in.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. 314-436-7900 is the number to call and ask your question of Michelle. As we head into the second half of November, it has been very warm based on, you know, history, but it is going to get cold on Wednesday. A cold front is coming in. More seasonal temperatures, highs in the mid-40s, which means overnight, I'm guessing, it could be around freezing or below. So what should people think about with this cold front coming in?
So hopefully by now you are not like me and like one of our previous callers and I discussed, you have moved all of your plants, your tropicals and your annuals, anything that you want to overwinter. Those definitely need to come inside. If you haven't done it yet, do it now. And other than that, things in your landscape are pretty much going to take care of themselves. So things like the hostas, like I mentioned, other perennials that tend to melt away after the frost, we'll see those starting to decline finally. And then the leaf drop, other things that you can do or start thinking about, you know, we do a lot of fall fertilization, especially on trees and evergreens. And then really any new plantings that you've had, you know, kind of making sure that those stay wet going into the winter. Not only have we had a lot of warm weather, we had a lot of drought leading up to this fall. So keeping right now, we're not in a drought. We've had a ton of rain in the last couple of weeks, but before that, super, super dry. And we've had some other areas or time frames in the last couple of years where we've gone into drought situations. So we're seeing some issues with that from the drought over the years. But yeah, keeping everything watered going into winter is super important.
Keeping everything watered going into winter.
So yes.
Make sure that was
That's clear. Correct. Yes. Going into winter. Everybody's shut off their irrigation systems by now. So we kind of forget about that the irrigation systems are off, but we still need to water if we don't continue to get this lovely rainfall.
All right. Good tip there. Let's go to the phones. Jim, you're up next with Michelle on the Garden Hotline.
Hi.
Hi there.
I've got some questions about trimming some dwarf, I guess you call them, ornamental trees. I've got a prairie fire crabapple, a sargentina crabapple, and it's called a coral burst crabapple. I want to kind of keep them smaller, like a round shape. Is now a good time to do that?
So another great question. Anytime I think about pruning, I think about bloom time on my plants. If you prune at the incorrect time, you can affect the flowering of the plant. So I believe everything you mentioned was a crab apple. Those bloom early in the spring. So any pruning that you do to those trees now, while it won't harm the health of your tree, it will take away some of the show from next year because you're cutting off the flower buds for next year. Those trees have already set their flower buds for next season. So any pruning that you do now can affect the bloom that you see next year. Typically for crab apples or any early blooming trees and shrubs, we recommend that you wait to prune those until after they're done flowering. And then you can give them whatever kind of haircut you want, whatever size and shape that you're going for. But definitely on a crab apple, I would recommend to do any heavy pruning or size reduction pruning for right after they get done with their bloom.
Okay, well, you were cutting out, but I appreciate your service. I think I got it. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Good luck.
Right. Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to the next caller, which is Nancy. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, this spring I bought several Mantevillas. First time I've had those. They were beautiful. Are they worth bringing in and wintering in the lower level, or would they be just too messy and not worth doing that?
So this is always an interesting question for me because it takes so much time and energy to overwinter plants. For me, I always think about, is that energy worth the, you know, the $20 or whatever it costs for the new plant in the spring? So if it's worth it to you to save that plant, I think the Mantevilla can be overwintered for sure. They do drop a lot of leaves. They're tropical. They want it hot. They love the summer hot temperatures and a lot of sun. So if you can kind of provide that or at least limp them through the winter and you have that energy and the motivation to, you know, keep them watered and do all of that kind of work, then absolutely bring it in. For me,
I hear you.
Yeah,
I think I'll just wait till spring and buy some new ones.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that's how I roll.
First year I've done that, and they were very beautiful.
They're great plants. It's a perfect, addition to any kind of summer display. So, but they are relatively inexpensive. But, you know, a lot of people like doing that and bringing inside and having something to look at and something to enjoy. They probably won't bloom a lot through the winter, and again, they'll drop a lot of leaves. So it's not like they'll have that great, beautiful display that you're used to from the summer season.
Right, right. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Good luck.
Bye.
All right. Actually, the next caller is also Nancy. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Hi there.
I have another question about a lemon tree. This tree is about 15 years old, and right now fruit is ripening, and I've been picking some and have like 8 more left to finish ripening. I got a new kind of fertilizer, and it told me to give it a feeding in September, which I did. But now it's absolutely loaded with blooms. I'd say probably, 80 to 100. Now, I'm thinking if I take all of these off, it's out of sync is how I feel about it, because usually I get blooms like in March, and then they're ripe all around now in October and November. But now that I've got blooms at this time of year, I'm not sure what to do about it.
So for me, I tend to follow the package instructions, and you can over-fertilize things. Most fertilizers that you're purchasing at the big box stores are a slow release fertilizer, especially if you bought a granular kind. So if it is in fact...
This is a slow release, and I think it was the Spoma. It was a really good brand.
Yeah, so I would definitely follow the whatever's on the label. And again, you can over-fertilize things, which can be just as bad, if not worse, than under-fertilizing. So I think probably you're okay to not fertilize right now.
Right. The package had said to fertilize in September and then not again until the spring. And I followed those directions. But now I feel like it's kind of out of sync that it caused it to bloom. And I don't know if I should pick off all those blooms and hope for more in March or if I just should let it go.
Was the plant inside or outside?
It's inside. It's outside in the summer, but then in the winter I bring it into my sunroom.
Yeah, and you can pick off some of those things if you know, we discussed this a little bit with a previous question, but the plant will send energy to all of those blooms and all of that fruit. So if you're wanting the plant to focus its energy on roots or storing energy or, you know, overwintering in the house, then, you know, picking off some of those buds might help save some energy and might help the leaves and the plant grow a little bit better.
Okay. I was wondering if I pick them all off, do you think I'll have a new flush of blooms like in March like they usually do? Or do you think this is going to be it for the year?
I mean, plants typically do and go back to, you know, what they usually do. This has been a very unusual year for plants, just with the weather and stuff. I know this is an indoor plant, but plants will typically go back into their natural rhythms. If they, you know, plants are known to do weird things or flush out flowers or things at times that you're not expecting. So I would suspect that, you know, if you keep it watered and keep enough light on it, that it will go back to its natural rhythm of things.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in, Nancy. The number is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscape Architecture doing a very good job of answering questions this morning. So if you have one, jump on the phone right now. We've got some lines open, and we'll get to those calls in just a minute. You're listening to the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thanks for tuning in. The phone number to call and ask your question of Michelle Reeser-West. She's with Pointer Landscape Architecture and Construction. She has a lot of experience in the horticulture business and residential landscape design and maintenance. So my guess is your question will be answered thoroughly and thoughtfully. She's done that already on the program. So jump on if you want to get your question in. It's 314-436-7900. And next, we're going to go to Michelle. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your question.
I'd like to know how you choose what kind of mulch you want to use.
That's another great question. So there are so many different kinds of mulches out there. You know, you have the traditional kind of double ground or coarse mulch. That's probably one of the most common mulches that people use. There's a bunch of different dyed mulches that people use that I'm not a huge fan of, but they're available commercially. How I choose my mulch is I think about, how do the plants live out in the world, right? So if the plant is out in the woods, it's not covered with wood chips or a really dense mulch. It's covered by leaf litter that's fallen from the trees. And that leaf litter will break down and help build that soil underneath it. So you're not having to add as much organic material. So I personally like to use some kind of a leaf compost or something. There's a product in bulk that you can buy from St. Louis Composting, one of the sponsors of this show, but they have a product. It's my favorite mulch. It's called Forest Finds. It's a kind of a mixture of compost and that bark mulch. But really, I mean, when it comes right down to it, it's just about personal preference. You know, what look are you going for? How often do you want to replace your mulch? Something like a leaf compost or something that has a little more compost or organic material in it breaks down faster. It doesn't stick around quite as long as some of those other mulches. But I also would recommend trying to get the highest quality mulch from a supplier that, you know, that really does a good job with the mulch. Sometimes, you know, you get these bags of mulch and a lot of times that's all people can do. Or maybe they just need a few bags and it's fine to pick those up from the big box stores. But you know, you can always get mulch delivered to your house, by the yard. And St. Louis Composting is my favorite place to get, any kind of mulch, but it's definitely personal preference. So if you're into that dyed look, I don't prefer that because, the look is bad. It's not as great for the plants, but it also doesn't break down very fast. And it doesn't look good to me. It doesn't look as natural. So those are kind of the things that I think about when I am choosing which mulch to apply.
Thank you very much, KMOX, and thank you for your expertise.
Yeah,
all right.
No problem.
Thanks for calling in. Let's go next to Sally. Sally, you are on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I have a landscape question. I have an area in my backyard that years and years ago was paved with asphalt. It's about 22 by 22, and it was intended as a basketball court for my boys. My boys have long since moved away. The asphalt is beginning to break up. It is in a low area in the yard where water collects underneath it. So even though I maintain it every year, it's beginning to crack and break up. I'd like to remove it and just replace it with sod.
Sure.
Can you give me an idea, ballpark, what that might cost me?
I mean, cost is really wildly different between companies. It's you kind of get what you pay for. So there are companies out there that are, you know, a little, maybe I'm not, less skilled is not the right word, but they're not as technical. They can come and do that kind of work. And this sounds like something that you don't necessarily need an expert for. So something like that might be, you know, where you're just removing that asphalt, putting in some new topsoil, and then laying down your sod or seed. But again, I recommend getting a couple estimates. I recommend getting a couple of different levels of expertise, right? From that guy that's just got his truck and a shovel and he's, you know, just really grinding and out trying to make a living, all the way up to, you know, a company like Pointer. We do, you know, landscape architecture and things like that. So I would recommend getting a few estimates. It should be pretty simple for somebody to do. It sounds pretty straightforward. You know, it costs money to get rid of asphalt. It costs, you know, that labor. And then, you know, the sod and the soil really shouldn't be that expensive. Really, I think your most expensive part of that is going to be getting rid of the asphalt.
And is that going to require a backhoe or some large piece of equipment?
Yeah, I don't think it will be a backhoe, but I definitely think they're going to use some kind of machine, probably a small bobcat. They'll need to break all of that up, and, you know, they'll definitely need to use a machine.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thanks for calling in, Sally. The number is 314-436-7900. We'll continue with your phone calls for Michelle from Pointer Landscape Architecture after a break at the top of the hour.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
And we have another hour of your questions for Michelle Reeser-West. She is with Pointer Landscape Architecture and Construction. She specializes in horticulture and landscape design, residential specifically, and maintenance of said landscape design. So, great questions so far, Michelle. We've had a lot of good questions.
Yeah, they've been really good.
And right now we're in that winterizing mode. So tell me a couple of things that you're doing right now that's keeping you busy in terms of phone calls, people asking questions at your work.
Right now we're really heavy into fall cleanups. A lot of people have been calling to try to get on the list to kind of get their yards cleaned up. So big thing right now is just cutting back perennials that need to be cut back. Not a lot of pruning to be done right now. Some people like to refresh their mulch in the fall, but a lot of leaf cleanup right now. So many leaves.
Although, hasn't this fall been a little short on the leaves? Nope.
Yeah, no, it definitely has. Yeah. I mean, we had that drought. The drought was really affecting the color. So as soon as we got some rain, that really helped out with the fall color. But the leaves are just sticking around because of the temperatures. They're so high. So should be seeing a lot more leaf drop next week for sure.
Yeah, it looks like we might be closer to 40s midweek, and I'm sure that's probably going to continue into the Thanksgiving week, the following week. The number to call to ask a question to Michelle is 314-436-7900. We've had a couple of questions about citrus trees.
I really wish I would have brushed up on my citrus knowledge before I came here. You know, so much of my time I focus on plants that are outside. I wish I would have brushed up on that citrus trivia before coming in today.
Well, what would you say your specialty is?
My specialty is really residential landscapes. Anything to do with your home gardens, that's really been my bread and butter for my entire career. I have almost always been in design and maintenance in some capacity. So plants for your home landscape is really where my knowledge base is.
And what is it about landscape design that you are drawn to?
You know, one of the things that I really love about horticulture and design is how I get to use my brain in different ways, you know, knowing about the plants and the Latin names and all of the ins and outs of what they need to be healthy makes me use my brain in one way. And then when I get to design or even prune, I get to use the creative side of my brain. And, you know, there's not a lot of professions where you get to do both.
Yeah, that's interesting. So creativity versus the technical part of it, right? So yeah, there's a little bit of both.
And it definitely feeds both sides of my brain. And the other thing it feeds is the, you know, the physical part of it. I get to be outside. So on days like today when it's kind of cold and rainy, it's not always the best. But, you know, when we had that 60-degree day yesterday or the day before, and it was just beautiful and sunny, and part of my job is being outside and getting to enjoy that. So, I mean, I get to do a lot of things. I get to see a lot of really cool gardens and really cool houses. So I really love being in this industry.
So you said you spent the first 10 years of your career sitting behind a desk. What was the impetus for you to change careers?
Boredom, mostly. I just was really unhappy with my career choice. I mean, it was what it was, but I was kind of just looking for more. I always was involved with gardening in some capacity. You know, I grew up with my grandmother, at the feet of my grandmother in her huge vegetable garden. And my mother always had, a lot of flowers, a lot of gardening happening, a lot of time spent outside. So it just kind of, you know, the light bulb went off and I went back to school for plants.
Yeah, I mean, that happened to me too. Different career change, but it happened to me knowing what I had, been interested in as a child.
Yeah.
And how that carries over. I think it's interesting to hear other people's stories.
Yeah, I think, you know, so much about the future sometimes tends to be what is your past. And I think that in searching for what, you know, what my passion and what I really wanted to do, it really went back to those childhood memories and the, you know, the hobby that was my mother's garden became, you know, my career, and I have not looked back since.
Well, we're glad you're here answering questions this morning. 314-436-7900 is the phone number. Mary, you're up next on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
This is Mary, but that's okay.
That's what I said. Mary, go ahead.
Hey, I've answered the worst, so it's all right. I have a 12-year-old lilac. I hate summer and I sweat a lot. So I let it go in the summer. It's got a little tall. But about 6 weeks ago, it looks like it's got powdery mildew, and I sprayed it once. Now what I want to know is, it still looks like it's got it, but is it too late in the season to go ahead and spray that again?
I would not waste time and energy on spraying it right now. Okay. All of your leaves are going to fall off, and then hopefully you'll clean up all of that leaf debris, and then next season, hopefully it will be a new year. But lilacs are notorious for getting powdery mildew, which is a fungus, and there are a few things that you can kind of do to help prevent that. One of them is proper pruning, or, you know, doing some thinning pruning within the base of the shrub. I always recommend about a third, and pruning should be done on this after the bloom. It's an early spring flowering shrub. So after it blooms, you can go into the base of the shrub and thin out anything, all of the larger branches, leaving two-thirds. So that will help with air circulation. Other people will spray some fungicide, or even doing a dormant oil spray at the beginning of the season before it leaves out can help. Most fungicides are not a bulletproof solution. Most lilacs are going to get powdery mildew at some point, especially if they're in some a little bit of shade at some point, especially in morning shade. Plants that are susceptible to powdery mildew really don't prefer morning shade, because that water from the morning dew sits on the leaves, and it just creates a great environment to grow all that powdery mildew. And once the powdery mildew is there, there's really nothing you can do about it. Spraying it can help from spreading, but there's really not much you can do. And it's just aesthetic. It's not really hurting your plant.
Well, that's good to know, because it's definitely there.
It's there.
And I definitely, probably when I pruned it last, didn't prune it enough. Because, as I said, me and the heat don't get along. So if I can't do it below 80 degrees, it doesn't get done.
Well, you could definitely prune this right after it blooms, which should be early spring, mid-spring. So hopefully it won't be that warm. But get out there right after it blooms and give it a little thinning haircut.
Well, thank you very much. I'm out taking my morning walk, so sorry about the dog in the background.
That's okay. Thanks for calling in. The number is 314-436-7900. We have several callers awaiting. We're going to get to those questions in just a moment. Stay tuned to the Garden Hotline on KMOX. And as always on Saturday mornings between 8 and 10 on The Voice of St. Louis, it's the Garden Hotline. And today we have a special guest. It's her first time. She's been doing a great job answering your questions throughout the last hour and 15 minutes or so. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscape Architecture. And we're going to continue with the phone calls. The number is 314-436-7900. Bob, you're up next.
Good morning, everybody. I got a question about vinca, impatiens, and petunias. I've got some in pots and some in the ground, you know, like in hanging baskets.
Sure.
Are they going to come back next year, or some will, some won't?
Of the three you mentioned, none of those will come back. Those are all annuals. So if you leave them outside over winter, they will not be winter hardy, and they will not come back for you next year. So, you know, we've talked about it with some previous questioners. You know, you can bring them inside. For me, that's a lot of work and not worth the small price that you pay in the spring for buying them again. But if you leave them outside, they will not make it for next year.
Yeah, I kind of thought that was the case. But so I appreciate that information. I have one more question about the purple smoke tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's a purple smoke bush.
Right.
The thing, you know, it's about, you know, it gets up to maybe 3 foot tall, and there's some shoots that can shoot up to 5 feet, you know, but they just, you know, I always cut that off because it just doesn't look right when you have three little, you know,
girls
that are, you know, four foot tall, and the rest of it's down there around, you know, two or three. So I guess my expectations of that thing in the ground for over 20 years, it's not going to get any bigger no matter what I do to it. Huh?
So you've had it in the ground for 20 years already, and it's only 3 feet? You've discovered a new dwarf cultivar, because most of those smoke bushes can get really, really big. So it's surprising to me to hear that it hasn't gotten much bigger. But I think you're probably right on track. If it's been in the ground for that long and it's remained at that size, it's probably likely it will continue to be that size.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures of them. I thought, oh, this is really going to be nice. And it is good looking, you know, for the most part. But the problem is it just didn't, get the growth, you know, the height that I expected. But anyway, I appreciate the information, and thanks for your show.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Bob. Let's go next to Ann. You're on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Yes. Hi, good morning. Thank you. It's funny, I just heard the guy asking about impatiens, and I had a bunch of volunteer impatiens come back from last year's hanging baskets on my front porch, which gets the afternoon sun, and if the deer had left them alone, it would have been like not one or two, but everywhere. There was volunteer impatiens, so I was shocked. But anyway, that's not why I called. I have my question, and really looking for advice. I am going to move a couple of arborvitae that are in my backyard in the corner of each side of the yard, and which backs up to like woods. And I want to plant a couple of dwarf fruit trees in each spot, probably peach, but maybe I should do one peach and one, I don't know what else, apple. But is there any advice Michelle can give me about that? Dwarf trees, I know they have not as long lifespan, but that's okay.
Yeah. So there are so many options. Edible landscape plants are really, really big right now. We do have a really amazing kind of local source for fruit trees. They do an online thing. It's called Stark Brothers Nursery. They only do fruit trees. They also have a ton of information on their different fruit trees, a lot of information on how to plant, how to care for them, how to prune them. So that is a great resource, especially when you're starting out with planting any fruit trees. I will say that when you are planting fruit trees, a lot of trees and a lot of cultivars do not self-pollinate. So a lot of apple trees, you will need multiple varieties, or, you know, two or three different varieties. There are a lot of, you know, cultivars now that you don't need that, that will self-pollinate. So I would pay attention to that when you're picking out whatever trees that you want in your yard, because you may need multiple of the same kind of fruit tree.
Okay, well, I was going for two peaches because that's what I love. You can never have enough peaches in the summertime.
Yeah, and peaches do very well in Missouri, so I think that's a good choice.
Okay, great. Stark Brothers, I guess it's starkbrothers.com.
Yeah, it's something like that. Stark Brothers Nursery. It's a great resource for fruit trees.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ann, for calling in. Yeah, the fruit trees, man.
Everybody wants them. I mean, I can't complain. I got a few in my yard. So.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Rosemary, you're on with Michelle. Hello, Rosemary?
Yes.
Hello. You're up next.
Thank you very much. I have a few questions. We planted a number of topiary plants in our front yard. And right now, they have been neglected. The lilac, which was a topiary, is now got sprouts coming up all over. And do we chop those off? Do we let them grow? Will they bloom? Shall we shape them?
Where are the sprouts coming from? They're coming up the stem? Are they at the base of the tree?
They're at the base.
So I would definitely prune those off. Sometimes that is an indicator that your tree's not healthy. Sometimes it's just an indicator that it was planted on a graft, which just means the rootstock is different from the top of the plant. So definitely keep those pruned, because you said you planted them as a topiary. So I think your intention is to keep them as a topiary. And if you let all of those sprouts at the base grow, you won't have a topiary anymore. You'll have a shrub or shrub form. So
right. And do those sprouts actually, if you left them alone, would they bloom?
They would, yes. Your topiary would just become a shrub form instead of, the topiary form.
Oh, that's pretty, the topiary. Well, the other topiary, I believe, is boxwood.
Mm-hmm.
And since we neglected it, neglected it this summer because we concentrated on flowers and vegetables in the backyard. When do we trim that now? Do we wait now?
Yeah, definitely wait. So with a lot of evergreens, there's like a simple rule that I try to go by, but it's basically tax day to Labor Day is when you should be pruning your boxwoods. Now, this year's been a little bit different because, well, in February, we had a warmer than normal February, and now in September into October and November, we have a warmer than normal fall. But that's typically around where our frost is. So we don't want to prune anything like boxwoods or any other evergreens, because if you prune them now and it stays warm, basically when you prune a plant, you're telling it to make more. So it'll flush out new growth, and then we can get frost, and then your plant will have frost damage, and then you'll have to look at yellowing foliage, and that also opens the plant up to pest and disease issues. So a good rule of thumb with boxwoods is tax day to Labor Day.
I'll write that down. And we need an Edward Scissorhand here.
Yeah, that would be fun. You should definitely dress up like Edward Scissorhands when you do it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rosemary. We'll take another call before we have to do a short break. Patsy, you're up next with Michelle.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your question.
Thanks for taking my call. My garden is in central Illinois with a pond of about 7,200 gallons. And part of the edge of the pond is flanked by ground that is higher than the edge of the pond. So I need to know a good idea of some plants that I can put in that will secure that ground from eroding. And when to plant?
So I would suspect that, you know, you could do a lot of different things. If you want to do something larger like shrubs are really good at holding in, you know, and helping with erosion. So is ground cover. There's a lot of options. You definitely are going to want to pick a plant that likes wet feet, because it's on the edge of a lake. That means it's going to be, you know, it's going to pull up some of that moisture. So, you know, there are a lot of different trees as well that don't mind being planted next to a lake. So I would definitely focus on that. There's a lot of natives, I think, you could around the lake. I think of, you know, a naturalistic planting. So I would think about, you know, trying to do more natives than more plants that aren't from here. They will tend to do a lot better in that natural lake setting. But
right. Can you give me an example of some natives?
Sure. There are some shrubs that don't mind water. Buttonbush is a really great native. It's actually also a host plant for a lot of butterflies, including the swallowtail. It has an unusual flower. It's like a ball. But those do very, very well. In fact, you can see those if you go out on lakes around Missouri and Illinois. They are naturally occurring there. Other things that do really well, there's a bunch of different types of grasses and sedges that are native that like wet feet. One that comes to mind would be palm sedge. It doesn't mind being wet, and it doesn't mind drying out a little bit, because I suspect that, you know, in times of drought, it's not always going to stay wet. But I would look for that. Also, the MoBot website's a really great source for plants that like wet feet.
Wet feet.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patsy, for calling in. The number is 314-436-7900. And Michelle will continue taking your questions in just a moment. If you're already on the phone, we will get to you after a short break. It's the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are at your service on this Saturday morning, and that service is gardening expertise. Michelle Reeser-West is here with Pointer Landscape Architecture, answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Up next, Chris, you are on the Garden Hotline. Chris, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead. You're up.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because 2 days ago, a deer attacked my 5-foot-tall limelight hydrangea. And it's basically roughed off all of the leaders of the tree except for three. And I'm wondering what recommendation you have for me to try to save this tree.
So, yeah, so we're seeing a ton of deer damage right now. A lot of it is coming from the antlers of the deer, which is what it sounds like that you're experiencing. And then they also do a lot of browsing this time of year because, you know, things are dying back and there's less food for them to eat in the woods. So they're also munching on a lot of things. They really like arborvitaes and things like that this time of year. But the good news for you is that you have a limelight hydrangea, and those guys are tough as nails. So I think that if you kind of just do some corrective pruning anywhere where there's a damaged, jagged cut from the deer, if you kind of just cut that back to one of the buds, one of the nodes, and try to clean up any of those damaged areas as much as possible, that it should flush back out pretty well. The paniculata type of hydrangeas can take a lot of hard pruning and a lot of abuse. So it's actually, of all the plants that that they could annihilate, that's actually a really good one, because it should, if you make those corrective cuts, and maybe you need to put up some fencing or something like that, okay, to protect any of the other ones or any future damage. But definitely just clean up those jagged cuts, and you know, hopefully next spring it'll flush back out.
Okay. According with the trunk, is there anything I should do with the trunk, because it's really roughed up there?
So is, you have like a tree form limelight?
It is a tree form. Yeah, it's 5 foot tall. It's a tree form.
Yeah. So there's really not a lot you can do. I mean, you know, back in the days, they used to recommend putting like a wrap or something like that on it, or, you know, they used to paint stuff over the top of it. You really just want to kind of let it heal, or try to heal on its own. I would do some kind of fencing so the damage doesn't get any worse, but I would just really try to leave that trunk alone, and hopefully that it'll heal. But if there's a ton of damage, that is the way that plants get the water up and down to the leaves. So that would be the only part that I'd be concerned about, and keeping that, you know, in good health.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks for calling in, Chris. 314-436-7900 is the Garden Hotline. And up next, we have Gus. Gus, good morning.
Good morning.
What's your...
Am I on?
Yep, you're on.
Yep, Gus.
Oh, yeah, I bought two crepe myrtles last year, and I put them in the ground and followed the directions on the tag and everything. And when winter came, I put a heavy mulch of leaves over them. And then in the spring, they looked like they were dead, and I cleared away all the, I didn't think they were dead. I cleared away all the brush and everything, and they came back, and they're about 3 feet tall, but they didn't flower. So my question is, will they survive the winter, number one? And number two, do they usually bloom the second year?
Yeah, so crepe myrtles for us are sometimes a little risky to plant. Crepe myrtles, if you ever have been to the south, they are giant trees that are beautiful. They do not look like they look here. So in St. Louis, really crepe myrtles, we say, are root hardy. So they do get a lot of winter dieback. That is very common. But a lot of times, like you're experiencing, the roots don't die back, so it will flush out new growth. If you planted them last year and had a little bit of winter dieback, that can affect, you know, the bloom. So that might not be, or that might be why you didn't get a big show. I suspect if we have another hard winter again this year, where we have, especially like the last two winters where we've had a lot of wind chill or extended periods of time where the wind chill was below zero, that really contributes to the winter dieback. But crepe myrtles are, again, very resilient in the regrowth. If they make it through, they can push out a lot of new growth the next season. And they do bloom on new wood, so that means if they do die back, the tops do die back through the winter, then they should have a bloom for you. Just might be a little bit longer. If it has to put all that energy into creating new stems, it may not put out as many flowers. But it should bloom for you. I'm going to cross my fingers, and you can talk nice to it. Maybe it'll bloom for you next year.
Okay, well, they look great. I mean, the flower, the bush, they bushed out really great. They're about three, they're a dwarf
turtle, sure.
And they're about 3 feet high, and I think one of them got one little flower on it this year, and the other one didn't get anything. So I'm thinking, like, a lot of plants, like, if you transplant an iris, that come back the second year, they get a flower, you know?
Yeah, and really, we always say that by the third season, takes 3 seasons for your plant, once you plant it, for it to really be where you're thinking. It's going to look like the picture in 3 years. So it takes 3 seasons to really get rooted in, and it sounds like you're struggled through the first year. So I would definitely say by year three, you should be seeing seeing a good show.
Great. Well, thank you very much. They're really a pretty plant. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Gus. We appreciate it. And the number is 314-436-7900. Greg, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wanting to replace my current hedges. It's just evergreen, like I guess arborvitae-type hedges with golden euonymus. And I'm wondering if are those good for hedges, and if so, how far apart do I plant them? I have direct southern exposure, if that helps.
So I am not a big fan of the golden euonymus. It doesn't always do well for us here in St. Louis. It does have a lot of pest and disease problems. And depending on the cultivar, it could make a good hedge. But because it is susceptible to so many diseases, it's not one that I typically recommend. It's not a long-term plant for us here in St. Louis. It's a great color. You don't get that kind of color with a lot of the other types of evergreens.
Sure.
But, you know, you could think about for hedging, there's always the good old yew that is a little old-fashioned, but it's coming back a little bit. There's some great cultivars that are specifically used for hedges. There's always, of course, boxwoods and things like that. But for me, I wouldn't recommend planting that golden euonymus.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I wasn't aware of the potential of disease problems with those. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You too, Greg. We are going to continue with your phone calls. We've got one segment left for Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer, Landscape Architecture and Construction. The number is 314-436-7900. If you have a last-minute question, it's your last chance right now. So stay tuned to the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
I'm Scott Jagow, and today we have Michelle Reeser-West on with us from Pointer Landscape Architecture and Construction. She specializes in horticulture and landscape design and maintenance, and she's been doing a great job answering your questions this morning. And the next one comes from Fran. Good morning, Fran.
Good morning. First of all, I just want to say I've been listening to Mike Miller for many, many years and so appreciate this program.
Thank you.
My question is, I have a desert rose that I have bonsaied, and I've had it for probably 15 years, but I continuously battle scale on it. I've tried neem oil. I've used a systemic, but it just seems like it comes back on me. So is there any other suggestion?
So scale can be tricky. It's really about timing. Because of the nature of the insect, it has, you know, like when it's on the stem and it's kind of covered with its protective shell, it's really not a great time to try to treat it because it's hard to penetrate. So it's more about trying to figure out the timing and figuring out what type of scale that you do have, because there's many different kinds. So figuring out when that scale is kind of in the creepy crawly phase, that's the best time to try to treat it with your neem oil or horticulture oil or something like that. So if you could do a little bit of research to try to figure out what kind of scale it is, then that would help you figure out the timing of when to treat it. But that's the best time is when they're before they put that coating, before they attach themselves to the plant.
Okay, because it does get the hard shell,
yep.
And then I usually just use my finger and get them off. But it's just frustrating that it keeps coming back. And I know you have to do interval treatments, but, you know, it just seems like after a while it comes back again. So.
Yep, it's a battle.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
And I appreciate you for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in, Fran. Up next, we have Jean. Jean, what's your question?
Hi, good morning. I wanted to know about what plants you can plant throughout the winter without killing them. We just bought a property, and the house that we're renovating will be ready for sale in the winter.
Sure.
And it has no landscaping at all.
And I was wanting to move plants from our property to there, but I don't want to move anything that I'm going to kill by planting it in the winter. We have trees, shrubs, perennials, ground cover, and ornamental grasses. Can I move any of those in the winter without killing them?
So I would not try to transplant your perennials, definitely not your grasses. Right now, I think we're past the window for planting those. You could do it. It's just a little bit risky. You still have plenty of time to plant trees and shrubs, really up until the ground freezes. We're still really planting a lot of trees and shrubs. Evergreens is a great time for planting. So as long as the ground's not frozen and you can keep it watered, then you can be planting this fall.
Okay, so ground cover would not be a good thing to move this coming year either?
I wouldn't, just because it won't have a lot of time to establish, and the root balls that when you transplant are smaller than the root balls on trees and shrubs, so it could, you know, it could freeze, it could, you know, it's just more risky to plant to do those now.
Also, I have a raised bed garden that I have tomatoes and peppers in, and I wanted to know how you would prepare that now to get it ready for the spring, like winterize it.
Yeah, really, just you just need to clean it up. You could do some kind of a cover crop. There's a lot of cover crop seeds that you can get online or in stores if you wanted to do that, but really you can add any kind of amendments and let it sit. Any kind of compost that you want to add, you can go ahead and do that now and let it kind of percolate over the winter. But yeah, just cleaning it up and letting it go over the winter. Not much to do right now.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for calling in, Gene. Steve, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Thanks so much.
Go ahead with your question.
It has to do with bougainvillea.
Okay. What's the question?
Hi. I have a bougainvillea that I bought about 10 years ago in a pot. I winter it every year, put it out in the summer. I have trouble getting it to bloom. It's a woody plant now. It's about a foot and a half tall. It's a gorgeous plant, but I have trouble getting it to bloom. This past summer, I starved it for water for about 8-10 days, and it bloomed a little bit. But it always loses a lot of leaves. Loses a lot of leaves when I take it inside, and then it blooms a little bit inside after I take it in. What's the best way? I've tried some fertilizers.
Have you tried to upsize the pot at all? How long has it been in the pot that it's in?
Well, I keep repotting it, but it's in about the biggest pot I can put it in. It's a big pot, but it's huge. I mean, it's probably, if you, does it need more room or less room? That's what I'm not sure.
I mean, if a plant inside a pot can get root bound. So if those roots are really dense in there, it may need to be repotted. And when you repot, you can kind of loosen up and kind of thin out some of those roots and give it some space to grow into a larger pot. But I think that could be if you haven't done that in a couple years, I think that would be a great first step is to repot.
All right, Steve, thanks for calling in. We'll take one more question. Make it quick, though. Bruce, you're up.
Yeah, I have a question. I planted a Japanese lace leaf Japanese maple in June, and it's regrown and lost its leaves several times throughout the summer. I know it was hot. I kept it watered religiously. It's young. And now, you know, it doesn't have any leaves, but it doesn't look like it's dead. Is that something normal that these things do when you transplant them in the heat of the summer?
Sure, I think so. It's very common, especially with all the fluctuating temperatures. I think just wait until spring and see what happens.
Okay. That is going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Michelle Reeser-West, thanks so much. You did a great job. Everybody seemed to get their questions answered. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. This is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.